This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, thanks to host Molly.
Yep.
That's me. We are talking about box graters.
Did this fell out of the salad spinner episode, I think, right?
I think it did.
We were spinning some salad and a box
grater
fell out.
And that box grater fell out of it. God, salad spinners are magical.
It's like, another one of those quantum mechanical mishaps. Mm-hmm. Like the fabric, multi-dimensions, the fabric of the
multiverse. The fabric of the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's fraying. If you haven't noticed.
It is.
Yeah.
Have you read The Sea of Tranquility?
No.
Oh, so it's kind of about the multiverse.
Okay.
Oh, that's great.
It's
Emily St. John Mandel's latest.
Okay. I should read that.
You should.
Does she have any other books? Just kidding.
Okay. I'm going to start us off.
Please.
I don't think I have ever lived in a home without a box grater. My entire life.
Me neither.
So my parents had a box grater when I was growing up, and it was really sharp. Like, it was not... Would it have been made of steel? Like it
I
was
think steel, yeah.
It was not shiny. It was not stainless. It would rust if you didn't wash it quickly enough. So you can imagine whatever that was, like that's the sharp metal.
Right.
That's the good metal.
I know what you mean. I feel like we may have had that as well. I remember like growing up our box grater not being shiny like this.
Mm-hmm. And I also remember the sound. It made a particular sound when you grated like a carrot or something against the large grating holes.
Oh, yeah. I love that sound.
That was a bit different from the sound that my grater makes now. It was like a little bit of a tinnier sound.
Interesting. Anyway, maybe it was made of tin.
I think my mom still has this box grater. I didn't stop over and ask. But it is the best box grater I've ever encountered. And that's right. You do occasionally text my mom.
Sure.
Okay. In my senior year of college, I lived in an apartment for the first time.
Okay.
And I remember going to IKEA, which, you know, was like brand new and so exciting.
I used to love going to IKEA, and like the thought of going to IKEA now, like for like a fun outing,
no.
Like even pandemic aside, like feels like, it's, I guess it's like when they stopped letting me go into the ball pit.
Yeah.
That's when I lost my interest.
We went to IKEA and stocked my little kitchen in this apartment complex on campus. Called Miralese. It was like the last building to be renovated on campus. It was gnarly. Anyway, I got a little box grater at IKEA, and that thing was always a piece of crap.
Okay.
Granted, this was over 20 years ago. I have gotten rid of that one. Now I have one that is shiny metal. It does not have a brand on it. I have no idea where I got it, and I've had it for at least a decade, and I love it.
Is it similar to the one that I have here?
It is very similar to the one that you have. It's got the classic four sides. It's tall. It does not have like a fancy base that catches things as you grate them. And mine, I think the handle at the top is metal. It's not like ergonomic in any way.
Right. Mine neither.
And it totally gets the job done.
Okay. So this is the second Amster Burton family box grater. The first one, I had written that it was a wedding present. But then when I was talking about it with wife of the show, Lori, this morning, she said, no, it wasn't really a wedding present. It was like a wedding hand-me-down because around the time we got married, Lori's aunt Susan was moving like across country and sent us some kitchen stuff that wasn't going to make the move, which was great.
Okay.
And one of the things in there was a used box grater that still had many years of life in it. And we used it for maybe 10 years and it did eventually break. As I recall, one of the corner welds gave out.
Okay.
And so that like you got like a gash down the corner.
Yeah.
And then we replaced it with exactly the same model.
Okay. And that's what we're looking at.
It doesn't have a brand name. I think we got it at like City Kitchens, which was a kitchen store in Seattle that used to exist downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably less than $10.
Have you ever replaced a box? Well, it sounds like I know the answer to this. But so what you're saying is this box grater that I'm looking at right now is quite old.
This one is at least 15 years old.
Okay. Yeah. I think mine is close to 15 years old, too, if not 15 years old. And it's interesting because I wonder how much better one might be if I like replaced it.
I've wondered this, too. And I kind of feel like for me, like I could understand like, you know, needing like a more ergonomic handle, or if you have like certain grading needs that the four sides of this don't fulfill, but I really only use one side of it.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a perfectly engineered kitchen utensil to me. Like, it's hard to imagine under what circumstances I might need something other than this, or even like appreciate something other than this.
I think also that the thing for me is that I have never had a box grater get so dull that I noticed it was dull.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is you're not grating stuff on here to like be beautiful, right? Like
I grate things to make me beautiful.
But like if I were going to grate carrots or something, if I want them to be gorgeous, I don't know. I mean, like the food processor makes more of
like a perfect
like
julienne.
A matchstick, yeah. Right? This creates a true shred that is like thinner at each end, right?
Oh, a true shred would be a great name for like an extreme sports show, right?
It would have to get really dull for me to notice that it was not an effective box grater anymore.
I had this experience recently where I replaced my microplane, which we had had for like 20 years probably, and I was so excited that like the new microplane was going to be noticeably sharper. Yeah, not really.
Okay. I've been thinking about replacing mine and I haven't.
Yeah.
Okay, well hold on. So let's talk about this.
Please.
So
are you gonna share with me the history of the box grater? I have not even looked at this agenda. Oh my god.
I just copied and pasted a lot of stuff from the internet into the agenda. So basically the history of Wikipedia is pretty scant, okay? What we call a cheese grater, the modern cheese grater, was invented in France in the 1540s by François Boulier.
How do we know that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But he made it out of pewter.
I feel like this guy wrote a book called I Am the Inventor of the Cheese Grater.
I think that this guy was like, I have invented something great that people will always need but will never be excited about, and I want to be known for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, Boulier, more like bully shit.
Wow, that's a good one, dude. Wow, that was one of your best ones.
I know.
Okay. Anyway,
all right, I'd like to announce my retirement.
So according to Wikipedia, he made this thing in order to like make hard cheeses edible.
How hard were the cheeses?
I know,
back
right?
Then?
Right? Okay.
Like,
but
if they weren't, why were they making them? I guess they were needed for preservation, and
yes,
that was like the primary goal.
Okay, but, of course.
Okay.
And then you had to be able to like get a chip off the old block.
You needed to get some.
Yeah, you needed to get a true shred.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, Culture Magazine, however, has a little bit more information. So they credit both François Boulier and Isaac Hunt, explanation of who that is.
Probably not French, though.
With inventing the cheese grater in the 1540s.
Okay.
Okay.
It was like a thing where like it was just in the air.
It was just in the air. Yeah. It was like the bubonic plague.
Oh God.
Wait, that wasn't in the air, right? That was by contact.
I think so.
Or did bubos like release things?
This is what we're going to talk about on our show now? Okay. Yeah. I think they release like a miasma.
Okay. Perfect. Great. great. Anyway, so François Boullier was in France. Again, we definitely know he made it from pewter. I don't know why we know this. But anyway, according to Culture Magazine, he made it to help households stretch budgets and take advantage of excess cheese, which aged rapidly.
Okay. I have many questions.
About excess cheese? About,
like... this
and cheeses that age rapidly. I mean, like Parmesan, like that stuff, you want that to age for like a couple of years. Yeah. How fast is it aging? Was time moving faster back then?
And did they have Parmesan like from Italy that got imported into, I guess they probably did.
I don't know. Maybe they had.
But like, okay, first of all, like, are there French hard cheese, like extra hard cheese? What, like, because like cheddar is like a hard cheese. Like, what do you call like a grana, like
well,
a grating
I think of cheddar
cheese.
As a semi-firm.
Okay.
I don't know if that's right, but I think of it as a semi-firm.
Okay. Is there a French equivalent to like a Parmesan?
So there are a variety of hard cheeses in France, but I'm not actually sure if any of them are French. Like I'm thinking for one thing of Mimolette, which is a very hard cheese. But
yeah, that's true.
I'm not sure if it's actually French or if it's Swiss or something.
Okay. Well, anyway, so people were, it sounds like people were just like accumulating so much excess cheese
oh, yeah,
and it was just becoming like a storage problem.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
And yet, despite having like tons of excess cheese in their cheese garage, they also needed to like stretch their budgets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure they were talking about budgets in the 1540s.
Maybe. Bougies.
Anyway, apparently, this is also according to Culture Magazine, during the Great Depression, when food was scarce and home cooks were trying to maybe like make dishes look more ample than they were.
Okay.
Do you think a lot of home cooks were busy doing this, like sort of trying to floof their dishes to make them look more full than they were?
Yeah, I think, yeah, they were in the 20s were a time of like making
floofing.
Things look more ample. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Apparently, during this time, Geoffrey Taylor of Philadelphia heard of Boullier's invention and made his own improved okay. cheese grater by sharpening the holes of a metal shower drain.
Oh my God. Okay. I have two questions. You know exactly what they're going to be. Number one, he heard of Boullier's invention 380 years later.
Yep.
Like, oh, hey, I heard that this guy in France invented some kind of cheese pulverizing device.
Mm-hmm. And this is gonna save us.
I guess, like, okay, I guess, first of all, they didn't have the internet yet, so
sure.
News traveled slowly.
Yep.
Like, they just heard about the French Revolution.
Well, you know, they probably sent a lot of graters over, like, on carrier pigeons, but they just didn't make it, like, across the Atlantic.
Plunk.
You know, like, picture, like, Hedwig or Urkel or whatever his name was.
Yeah, picturing Steve Urkel from Family Matters trying to fly while holding a really heavy cheese grater.
What was the name of the really like sort of ditzy owl?
I don't care. It's Urkel. It's fucking Urkel, man.
No, that the come on, that the Weasleys had, who was like always flying into windows and stuff like that. Do you remember?
I do remember, but like if I ever remembered the name, it's been absolutely wiped by the idea, by this image of Steve Urkel, like with some sort of flying, like a jetpack that he invented.
Yeah,
but
to
also,
carry box graders.
But yeah, that like he invented a, like the world's first working jetpack and used it to deliver graters.
And he did it. He attached the jetpack to his body with his suspenders, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And Laura's still not impressed. Okay.
Wait, was that the name of the girl?
Was that the name of the girl?
I don't know.
I think so. Okay. That's what came to mind. So.
Okay, anyway, yeah.
I watched every episode of that show, but not since it originally aired.
Okay, but hold on. But your other question was the shower drain used?
Of course.
Yeah, of course it was. You think he just had a shower
That's
drain
true. Like,
lying
back,
around
this was
not
the
using
depression.
It?
Like they didn't have like extra shower drains.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so, you know...
Just wipe a little bit of the hair off it.
We have a lot of questions.
Then start sharpening.
About where this thing came from. And I didn't find any information about the actual, like, box grater, you know?
Yeah. Like, when did that start,
but
right?
I did find some thoughts from Wirecutter that helped me kind of understand what the advantages were of a box grater over other types.
I feel like I can kind of intuit what they are, but I want to see if I'm intuiting correctly.
Okay.
This episode brought to you by Intuit, makers of QuickBooks.
So, you know, this is definitely like a multi-tool. This is the kitchen multi-tool.
This is the kitchen multi-tool, yeah.
So, you know, you could use it for like shredding vegetables like potatoes, like to make hash browns or carrots. You could also use it to grate Parmesan. You could use it to grate ginger. You could do these things in a food processor, too, obviously. Yeah. But the food processor...
that came later than a box grater, I'm sure,
well,
right?
Sure. And the food processor has more parts that you've got to clean.
Yeah.
It also, like, takes longer to set up.
Can I tell you something about my food processor?
Hold on. I'm not done.
Okay.
It also... So the box grater works well for preparing, like, smaller amounts of food than a food processor, okay? And also, it also keeps things from getting super messy because it contains whatever it is that you're grating.
I sort of imagine that maybe the box grater started out by only having a grater on one side just for the advantages of like containing the grated items and being stable. And then they realized, oh, we could like put more graters on the other sides that people will never use.
I mean, of course, so prior to you know, microplanes becoming like all the rage, I of course used this for grating Parmesan and stuff like that on the smaller sides.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's get into this.
But hold on. Okay, so just to sort of get the lay of the land, in addition to box graters, there used to be rotary graters. Do you remember a rotary cheese grater?
I have a rotary cheese grater. I use it sometimes for Parmesan.
Oh, why would you use that over this?
I don't know. It's because it's
nostalgia.
Fun. Maybe nostalgia.
I mean, like, we had one when I was little.
It really work better. No, I don't have a good answer.
Okay, well, so there's rotary graters.
I'll tell you what. If you want to like grate a bunch of Parmesan like over a dish, like the rotary grater is better.
I get that. Okay, I get that.
Because you can grate it directly on and you don't have to like grate it and then like pick it up and put it on.
I get
which
that.
Which is so much work.
Well... Okay, so there's the rotary grater, there's a box grater, and then there's a grater that we might call like a flat grater.
Yeah, which is the worst kind.
Which is the worst kind. And those have been around for a really long time, right? Like prior
probably, if you think about a shower drain.
Right, that
cupboard,
was like a flat grater.
That's flattish, yeah.
And then there is, I think, of like the fourth type might be called a rasp grater. So it's a style that has a handle.
Yeah.
Meant to be held aloft, not like rested on a cutting board like you might with a flat
Although
grater.
You can like hold it with the tip of the rasp tilted down toward the cutting board.
That's
I do
true.
That sometimes.
I mean, I do think that the beauty of a rasp style grater that you can just hold in your hand like that is that you can grate cheese over something. You can grate cheese or like citrus zest or nutmeg
citrus
over
zest.
Something.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you, it is a pain in the ass to hold a box grater.
Yeah, no, it's
up
just not made for that.
No, it's meant to be used like on a countertop.
Do you think who is the American guy, Jeffrey Taylor of Philadelphia? What other things in his house do you think he tried grating cheese on before alighting on the shower drain cover? Mm. Like, I'm wondering, like, maybe he had, like, a stubbly face and tried his own face.
Yeah,
Sure. Maybe they probably, like, toothbrushes back then were really rough and stiff.
Yeah, maybe he tried, like, a washboard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because a washboard is basically a big rasp.
Like, really big teeth.
Yeah. So basically, I reach for this thing. I have a microplane, you know, the rasp style. I think even in a drawer somewhere, I have a flat grater.
Mm-hmm.
I never reach for the flat grater. If I want to use something with that size holes, the box grater, the small grating holes.
It works really well. Now, can I ask you now, do you ever use this side of the box grater that has like the little, what do you even call this?
I call this the rasp side.
Yeah, okay. It's raspy. Like. Does that do anything?
Yes. So it reduces cheese to like a powder.
Okay.
So for instance, when I am making meatballs,
when
I'm making meatballs and I want the cheese to just like dissolve into the meat, I do really like using this side. And I learned this from Cafe Lago.
That makes sense.
Because in their meatball, they use really, really finely ground.
I feel like I maybe like had a bad experience with that side of the grater once, like either involving the mafia or just like grating my knuckles and like shy away from it.
That side is terrifying.
Yeah, but maybe I need to like face my fears head on and like put my head on the grater and give it another try.
I think the truth is I don't use that side very often, but if you are looking for... Or even, God, you know when you go to like an old when in the old times.
You mean the 1540s or the 1920s?
More like the 1860s.
Okay.
When you would go to, let's say, like a fancy Italian restaurant.
Okay, yeah, okay? I remember. Like,
let's say your grandfather was in town, and they would bring around a little shallow bowl of Parmesan with a spoon.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a restaurant that did that?
Yeah.
That would be like rasped Parmesan.
Okay, that makes sense.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it has a nice melting ability.
I'm going to try this sometime soon. Yeah, I use the box grater at least like 3 times a week, probably more.
Me too.
Like, you know, anytime if I'm shredding some cheddar for a grilled cheese or enchiladas or like a quesadilla. Like, I use it for a lunch quesadilla all the time.
Absolutely.
Or mozzarella. Like, cheddar and mozzarella, those see the most box grater action in my house. I do use the little hole side for Parmesan, not the rasp side. Too scary.
So wait, you don't use a microplane for Parmesan?
I sometimes use a microplane for Parmesan. It depends. Like, I will get out the microplane if I just want to grate a little bit over some pasta that I'm about to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to use it as an ingredient, the microplane is too slow.
God, that's a really good point. When I make like cacio e pepe and I need a lot of grated Parmesan or pecorino, I have still tended to use the microplane, but my hand gets tired and I wind up like resting the tip of it on the cutting board the cutting board. But don't you think that like the pieces here don't melt as well as they would from a microplane?
Yeah, probably, but I don't know if I should care. Like compare sometime.
Has anyone in the history of the world ever used the slicer box grater?
Let's try it right now. This is our show and we can do whatever we want. And I have some cheese in my house. It's excess cheese.
Great. Well, that's what this grater is for.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Matthew, can I talk for a minute about how box graters are made?
Yes, please.
Okay. Oh, actually, no, wait. Let's do this first. I noticed that there are three
slicing
holes.
By that. Okay.
I think you really only need one. Okay, do we have 6 slices now that you went down?
No, like it somehow came up with 4.
We have like chips of cheese.
Oh, wait, no, there's one. No.
That didn't go as badly as it could have.
But under what circumstances would you do that? I mean, because they're not going to be like regular slices.
Maybe you're somebody who, like, I know that you and I both like to grate cheese that we are using in a grilled cheese or a quesadilla. Maybe there are some people out there who really prefer to slice cheese, and this is a way to reliably thinly slice cheese.
Look how thin this slice is.
So that's pretty satisfying, right?
Yeah, I'm still never going to use it again. That's interesting. That's going to be the one time in my entire life that I use the slicey side of the box grater.
Wow.
Really makes you think.
Matthew, if you go before me, I'm going to give a eulogy, whether your family wants it or not.
Okay, I want you to put this in writing. I want you at my funeral. You have to talk about the one time, how you were there the one time.
You used the slicing side of the box grater. Uh-huh. I'll never forget it.
And I want you to talk about that, and also about the time we went to the nude beach and how like my junk looked great.
You looked fantastic. No, all of you.
Thank you.
You can just like take this and you can think on it on a rainy day. You looked great.
Okay, but I want you up there on the what do they call the plinth?
The dais.
Yeah. I want you up on that dais.
Banging my gavel.
Yeah, if you need to like draw a picture, go for it.
Okay.
Okay, question. I know you have more to say about box graters, and I will definitely be listening and not interrupting. When you grate on like the main side, of the box grater,
the big hole side,
do you find it satisfying to like go up there with your hand and like knock off the strands of cheese?
But I always wish I didn't have to. Like,
I
don't like that I have to get my hand dirty using a box grater. I wish there were a way to do it where I didn't have to get dirty.
Does that make your hand dirty?
Well, cheese makes your hand feel kind of like
a little greasy.
Gummy.
Yeah.
I think that for me, the big downside of a box grater is I hate cleaning it. Even though it never like snags the sponge like I think it's going to.
I just throw mine in the dishwasher.
I wash mine by hand.
Interesting. Because well, this has been through the dishwasher hundreds of times. And
really?
Look at it. Look upon its majesty.
Well, and it hasn't gotten any duller. I mean, I feel like anything that has a cutting surface, I don't want
to. I know what you mean, but like I could prove to you right now that this is still sharp as a tack.
Okay, so the other thing is we probably run our dishwasher maybe every third day. And I feel like if I grated cheddar on that and left the cheddar on it in the dishwasher, it's going to get
a fair point. We run
crusty.
Our dishwasher pretty much every day. And whenever I have reached for the grater and it wasn't there because it was in the dishwasher, I was like,
Yeah.
And I don't like feeling that way.
My favorite thing is if I've just grated cheese on the big hole side.
Okay.
The ideal scenario is that there are some dishes in the sink already, one of them that is large enough to hold the box grater.
Oh, interesting.
And I can put the box grater dirty side down into this vessel that already has soapy water in it. And then the cheese like gets nice and loose and then it's super easy to clean.
Okay, two things. First of all, I like that you said that this is your favorite thing. And secondly, I really appreciate your use of the phrase dirty side down, which like I'm going to figure that out, a way to work that into conversation later today.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, I met someone recently who keeps a dirty bed in their house and then a bed for sleeping.
Oh, my God.
And they
okay, I want to hear about this and then I want to tell you a story.
And they only use the dirty bed for sex and like playtime, and they use the clean bed only for sleeping.
I mean, that sounds very bourgeois. I'm not totally opposed to the idea.
I mean, like, sex is messy, but it is not that messy. And I mean, I mean,
it depends what you're doing, I guess.
Well, I know, but like, put a towel down.
Yeah. But like,
are you that worried about like sleeping? And I mean,
I'm not. But I can't decide whether I like this idea or not. Like something about it, like it just seems like it might be fun to have like the special fun bed, the happy fun bed. But it's also nice to make the regular bed the happy fun bed. I mean,
so, like,
the good news is like I'm never gonna have to figure this out because like we certainly don't have room for another bed.
Okay. All right. Well, moving right along.
Okay. Wait. So I have to tell you a similar story though.
Okay. Sorry.
So. I was swapping like roommate, like funny roommate stories with friends at work. I think it was Kathleen, like shout out to my coworker, Kathleen, I think was the person who told this story. If someone else, I apologize for slighting you. It absolutely blew everyone else's story out of the water. So Kathleen had a roommate who didn't like getting into bed when they had been like, you know, sleeping like sweatily and like then getting back into bed with their own cold sweat, right?
Sure, sure.
But was lazy, like didn't want to like have to be doing like washing their bedding all the time. So the solution they came up with was to put like 12 flat sheets on their bed and have like designated sections, like between these two sheets is like medium clean and between these two is like just showered. Can't get into like, you know, zone 4 unless I've just showered. And then like this is like, you know, zone 1 over here is like the real gnarly one. And
hold on,
wait,
wouldn't they just keep removing fitted? If they put like 12 on, wouldn't they just keep removing them as
you would think so? But it sounded like they kept them all on for a while and just knew like which pairs of sheets was like which level of filth.
Wait, but were they?
It doesn't make any sense. Go ahead. So they like they come back from working out and know like last time I came back from working out.
Wait, did they keep extra flat sheets on too? Or just fitted? Because I don't understand.
Oh, did I say fitted? I meant flat.
Oh!
Sorry.
I think you said fitted.
Okay, that would be wild.
Oh my God.
Now,
okay,
now
so
it makes
flat
sense.
Sheets.
So,
now this
so
makes
they,
sense.
They had formed like a series of pockets, and some were like dirty pockets, and some were clean pockets. And they knew which pocket to climb into if they had just showered or just got back from the gym or anywhere in between.
I mean, humans are endlessly
It's genius and
terrifying
and like... It was so good. Like,
wow.
I just like having heard this story, you know, just, I just like felt good the rest of the day.
I guess I'm just like a filthy pig because I don't
care at all.
No, no, no. Hold on. I do sweat a lot at night and so does my spouse. I think it's a side effect of our antidepressants.
Sure.
Anyway, I do sweat a lot at night and we change our sheets like once a week. So I'm just sleeping in my own filth for like six of the seven nights.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. And
that's
fine.
What showers are for.
Yeah. I don't care.
Okay, great. Perfect. Just setting that up. Okay. Wait, but now let's finally talk about how box graders are made.
Yes, please.
I'm gonna try to condense this. Okay. So these holes that are all around in the multiverse.
Okay. Yeah.
Wormholes. Okay. No, the holes on all the sides of the grader are made in one of three ways, either stamping, etching, or a combination of the two. Okay.
All right. I think I might know what this means.
So in stamping, the holes are like mechanically punched out of a metal sheet, a steel sheet. Okay?
I think that's what we're looking at here, right?
Okay. That seems to be. And the side of the hole that protrudes catches the food and forces it against the edge to shear it apart.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at right there. Okay.
It's there's really a lot of shearing going on.
There is. Okay. Etching uses a chemical process to corrode thinner, more flexible sheets of metal.
I'm just thinking out loud.
Creating very sharp, fine teeth that catch and shave off pieces of food.
So that's if you buy, like, you can buy a microplane brand box grater, and it's gonna, that's what microplane is all about, etching, I think.
Oh, okay. So etched teeth might be preferable to stamped holes because they're sharper, but they're also like trade-offs with this, apparently.
I think they probably are less durable.
Yes, and apparently the more rigid surfaces of stamped sheets produce like more uniform shreds.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
and uniform etched shreds are really important to me. Like,
oh,
I don't
God,
think anything's more important.
Me too. So
how do they fold it into a box?
I don't know.
Okay, great.
Okay,
just,
Matthew.
Just
wait.
Say just like I'm a really strong person.
So we have over the years accumulated like some camping gear.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some of it.
Yeah, and last year I decided to finally. I have a real like people who are really good at camping and who are like who just
people like me
make it look really easy and enjoyable. You know, they have like dedicated like a dedicated kitchen gear.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my friends, the Rehas, have basically a plastic tub, like a plastic storage bin that is their camping kitchen, basically. And
yeah.
It has like all spoons and all the stuff that's dedicated to that. And in the past, I've been like, why would I spend money to have like two box graters?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I do this? Last summer, I finally went out and like fully equipped our camp kitchen. So now we have like a measuring cup. We have a box grater. We have like tongs, all this stuff dedicated in the camping kitchen. Anyway,
you're going to get another bed next. I can feel it.
But anyway, when I went to Fred Meyer to purchase these tools, I wound up getting a box grater that is full size, which because I hate using small box graters.
No.
I don't understand the point. So I went ahead and got a full size box grater. But I got one that had like a base on the bottom.
Or like a triangular one with a ball at
I
the top.
I don't understand. I hate that.
It's not the same shape as a Tillamook baby loaf. Like,
well,
this grater is perfectly sized for a Tillamook baby loaf,
well,
the perfect shape of
also,
cheese.
Also, I want to be able to get my hand all the way up the inside of it. If you've got like a pyramid-shaped one, you can't do that.
Yeah, if you've got a pyramid-shaped one, like, get that
who are
checked
you?
Out. Yeah.
Anyway, the one that I bought, like, a lot of box graters today come with a base that's like a cap that fits on it that catches the food. Sometimes it even has measurements on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that. It has like a plastic side. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I bought one that has that. And
did it change your life?
It was fine.
Okay.
I enjoyed it for camping because actually it actually had like a full-on like little Tupperware. Like,
oh,
there's
nice.
like a little rectangular vessel that sits up inside the box
That's
grater
cute.
With a lid. So you can actually grate directly into that vessel if you take it off and put it on the bottom.
Okay.
And I did like that, especially for camping when like it's really useful to have a couple like Tupperwares that are easily stashed away.
Yeah, I got to say, like, I have come around a lot on the idea of like having more than one of something.
Yeah. So my box grater at home does not have a cap on the bottom or anything like that. And I really don't care. But I think it's great that a lot of them come with it these days.
I think it's great, too.
Great. Okay.
But I'm still not going to go out and get one.
Matthew, are there any things that you grate on yours that we haven't discussed?
I don't think so. It's really, really three things as far as I can think of. Cheese, carrots for making coleslaw, and potatoes for making hash browns. And that's about it.
Yep. For me, it's cheese.
Onions. I will grate onions for, there's this one recipe that I think we've talked about on the show before that's because Abby asked me for the link. So we must have talked about it on the show for like a pork or chicken donburi that is made with a sauce that has a lot of grated onion in it. I will grate that on the box grater. Very satisfying.
Like if I'm making marinade for bulgogi or something, I would grate the Asian pear, apple.
Yes, I will do that too on the small hole side.
I use mine for cheddar and mozzarella.
Yeah.
I also use mine
for Jack as well.
In the summer, one of my favorite kind of go-to potluck things is to bring ranch dip. Mm-hmm. It's just, Hidden Valley ranch powder, one packet to a pint of sour cream.
Sure.
And then grate cucumber into that.
Oh, that sounds like, even though I don't like that sort of thing, that does sound appealing on a hot day.
Yeah, it's delicious. And again, something that you could take on a camping trip.
Yeah.
Anyway, and a box grater is great for that. In fact, my friend Natalie, who introduced me to the concept of grating cucumber into a ranch dip like that, she once showed up at Lake Washington one afternoon when we met up there with our young children, and she had brought a cucumber and a box grater and a thing of Daisy sour cream and anyway.
And you looked around and everybody on all of their picnic blankets
had
box graters. They were all grating different things. It was just a beautiful tableau. And you painted an impressionist painting.
I did. It was called Sunday Lunch at Lake Washington.
And I'm going to be bidding on it this week at Sotheby's.
Anyway, wait, but I'm not done.
Okay.
And then, of course, zucchini for zucchini bread.
Okay, that makes sense. I've never made zucchini bread, but I understand that it includes grated zucchini.
Yep.
If you're making carrot cake, would you use a box grater for that?
I would.
Yep. I've never made carrot cake either, but I've eaten it.
Yeah.
I have a question. Have you ever grated your finger or knuckle on a box grater, and isn't that the best and you can't wait to do it again?
Yeah. I love grating my finger on any kind of grater.
Yeah.
I mean, box graters are obviously the best grater.
I do think, the classic stamped box grater is the worst one to grate your finger on because it will take, a chunk out that will bleed forever. Yeah. And the blood will get into the food. And, not only did you ruin your finger, you ruined your food also.
Why do fingers and toes have to bleed so much? I mean, toes will just – you could bleed out of your toe.
I think it's because, they have to, do so much. And so they just
need a steady
flow of oxygen and nutrients.
Yeah. I know that you put here on the agenda, have you ever grated butter? And this is something I've heard about people doing in biscuit recipes or pie dough. It's definitely a thing I've heard of. I've not tried it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks appealing to it's frozen butter, right?
Yep.
And the idea of having little grated shreds of butter and having them get smooshed into a pie crust sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe someday.
All right. Well,
do we have anything else to say about box graters? You can see here that one corner is where it was fused together.
Yes.
Right here. I think that's probably where our old one came apart.
I gotta say, I think this is one of the unsung heroes of the kitchen.
I think so too. It's
cheap. You could achieve all your grating needs with it. I mean, you don't need a microplane. It's nice, but you don't need it.
A microplane is good for grating ginger, and I don't know if any of the sides of this are really good for that, but there are also other ginger graters.
I have rasped nutmeg.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've also rasped nutmeg. That's a lot of consonants in that phrase.
Anyway, I like it. I think this is a real democratic kitchen tool.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
All hail the humble box grater.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay.
It's getting knighted today.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to segments, including our new segment where we knight an inanimate object every week.
Okay. All right. This week's spilled mail comes from listener Sky. Sky says, first off, I'd like to say that my boys, 12 and 7, are big fans of the show. Don't worry, I only let them listen to the appropriate episodes. The NSFJ tag was very helpful while it lasted.
So are you going to let them listen to this episode where we talked about whether or not you should maintain a fuck bed?
Oh, listener Sky, let's mark this one NSFJ.
Okay.
Abby, I think we should also mark the previous one NSFJ. Okay.
I don't remember the previous one. That was so long ago.
Okay. All right. So back to listener Sky's email. A few things. Number one, Molly once talked about how she wishes the rainbow nerds came separated by color, probably on the movie theater candy episode. Well, wish granted. There's a new candy called Nerds Twist and Mix that is a Nerds Twist and Mix that is a container with organizers like a school lunch
the
tray.
The first time you read it, you said it like the queen. Like, Nerds Twist and Mix.
All right. A container with organizers like a school lunch tray that keeps the nerds separated by color.
Finally.
Oh.
Finally, we can separate the nerds by color.
I am so excited about this. You know, listener Sky, just yesterday, my family was having a little like movie afternoon, and we each got to pick out candy at Safeway.
Nice.
And June picked out like the Nerds gummy clusters.
Oh yeah,
that is a really good candy.
Yeah,
it's sort of, I think that's a fantastic.
It has like crunch, sort of like those like.
Well, it's got a soft gummy interior.
Right, the berry, like the raspberry, like
the Haribo raspberries.
Yes,
but it's covered with nerds.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, the second part of listener Sky's email. You two have got to stop recommending books to read in Now But Wow. I have a to-be-read that will never be finished, and you two consistently add fantastic recommendations to it. Do you use any book tracking apps like Goodreads, Storygraph, etc.? Thanks, Sky, Cash, and Canyon.
Okay, that's a great question. First of all, yes, we will definitely stop recommending books. We're off books. I don't use any of those things, and I just kind of forget which books I've read, and I think I just need to be okay with that.
I used to just forget what books I had read, and it never bothered me. And then I started reading a lot. I've read a lot more in the past 5 years than I think at any other point mm-hmm. in my life. So I started tracking it just in Evernote because I kind of didn't want to use – I don't like Goodreads because I don't like reading all the other people's reviews.
Oh, yeah.
It upsets me.
Yeah, I don't like to go on Goodreads because I might accidentally look up one of my own books and see mean things that people said about it. And
I can hardly – if I have to link to any of my books for any reason, I do it like with my eyes like squinted shut because stumbling upon a bad review, which has an almost magnetic appeal to an author.
Oh, sure.
Is devastating.
They don't have reviews on bookshop.org, do they?
You know, they used to, or at least on some books, they have a little like kind of almost like a chart on the side that's like rave, positive, or pan, or rant or something. Anyway.
Never mind.
Whatever. Okay, but listener Sky, I keep track of it in Evernote. It's kind of a very like lo-fi way of doing it. I have to remember to go in and write the book down.
Sure.
But,
okay.
Yeah. But it works for me and keeps me from being dependent on like any outside website that might have reviews.
Yeah, and there definitely have been moments where I'm like, what was that book? And had trouble finding it, but like I'm old and I'm not going to change now.
Yeah. Yeah, I have tried using my our library's website has like a shelf where you can like mark things as read or whatever. But that's not a really reliable thing for me because number one, not everything I read comes from the library, and number two, I don't always finish books.
Yeah.
And I also like to keep a record of whether I finished them or not.
Sure.
Anyway. All right. Well, hey, listener Sky, you are going to be thrilled with this week's Now But Wow. It's a book.
Yes.
I'm so sorry, listener Sky, but this one is really good. I'm actually in the middle of reading it right now, and I couldn't resist. So the world does not need me to recommend another Louise Erdrich book to anyone.
Let's move on to our next segment.
We all know about the brilliance of her work. However, this book is just so good, and I'm loving it, and I grabbed it on a whim off the Peak Picks shelf. It's The Sentence.
I'm familiar with this, but haven't read it.
It's her latest book, and I have to say part of what grabbed me about it is it's kind of like a weird ghost story. There's a ghost
in it. The Boneless Hands.
Yeah, there's a ghost that is haunting a bookstore. The protagonist is a native woman named Tookie, spelled like cookie, but with a T.
Okay.
And Tookie is a really like colorful and super quirky narrator.
Okay.
When the book starts, she is using drugs heavily and you kind of have to just figure that out from like what she's telling you. And she commits a crime that is comical in its bizarreness.
Okay.
She's very funny. And then the book slowly, she goes to prison. She comes out of prison. That part of the book is very short. And then the kind of ghost story begins because she works in a bookstore. And the best part is that, so Louise Erdrich owns a bookstore in Minnesota.
Most authors do these days.
Yes. But anyway, she is a minor character in her own book. Because
nice.
Tookie works in a bookstore that is owned by a woman named Louise, who is described as looking just like the author. Anyway, I'm really loving it, not just because it's a great story, but because it just makes me realize I don't read very many books where the protagonist is a Native American.
Sure.
And I'm really loving how, you know, I really love it when I come upon a show, you know, this is different, but when I come upon a show where a character is queer, but that's not the most important thing about them.
Oh, yeah, of
right?
course.
And that is, the, of course, I think we can probably, if you've read Louise Erdrich, you know this about her characters. This is a huge part of their lives, and yet they get to be whole people, too. And so anyway, I'm feeling really glad that I picked up this book. It's a fantastic story, and it feels really fun to be inside this character's brain.
Okay. The Sentence.
That's The Sentence by Louise Erdrich.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
And you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, unless if someone's just like playing this podcast like too loud on their phone on the bus, like you can't like review us on the bus, can you?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. It was a desperate attempt to like, you know, just work like one last little bit of fun into the show.
We can still try. We've got the closing joke.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well, so you can chat with other Spilled Milk listeners, maybe suggest some good jokes for us at reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. It's been, how long have we been doing this? Like 12 years?
12 and a half years,
12 and a half
I
years, and we're still maintaining separate beds. except when we go on vacation.
Yeah, and then sometimes we do share a bed.
All right.
Okay, I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
Hold on, I'm crunching.
That's fine.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.